You guys, here I am back again with another book review. I don't know what the deal is with my voice. I keep like it keeps words like keep dropping out. I don't have a cold or anything like that. I don't know what's the matter with it. So I apologize for hopefully it'll not sound like this from now on, like for the rest of my life or whatever. So anyway, book review time. My Tomes of Terror show. And this is a book that I had been talking about doing. I think I talked about this even way back in January, that I was really looking forward to rereading this book and doing a review on it, because I read it back probably like the same year that it came out, which was 2009, and I really dug it. And I was like, yeah, okay, I'm just gonna, I think the first time I read it, I think I checked it out of the library. So I actually went and like bought a copy so I could redo it for the show. And I've talked about it multiple times on the show and recommended it. Although I will say, just spoiler alert, that this is not a book I would recommend to anybody. It's one that I'd have to kind of know what your literary proclivities and tastes were before I would think that that you would like it, because one, it's a chunker. It's almost 800 pages, and it's very, very dense, and it's very, very literary. So if that sounds like something that's gonna make you go boring, then I would not recommend it. But I fucking loved this book. I just got so, at the first time I read it, and I think I liked it even better the second time, I just got so swept up in it, in its world. You know what I mean? It's just a great, great fucking book. I kind of felt like Guillermo del Toro for a long time was talking about doing a movie version of this, but far as I know, it's still in development. So, and it has been like way back since the fucking novel came out back in 2009. So, I mean, I really hope that, because Guillermo del Toro would make a fucking epic movie of this, and I'd really like to see it. Although maybe a series would actually work out better, but maybe not. But I don't know if it's ever gonna happen. I hope it does, but I don't know. And this is, like I said, I've brought this up on many occasions. This is Drood by Dan Simmons. Now, if you guys remember, a while back, I had reviewed, because I've read several Dan Simmons novels. I read Summer of Night, I read The Terror, I read like a bunch of other ones. And he's really good at doing kind of different, like he does horror novels, he does like historical fiction. This is kind of mostly historical fiction, but has a lot of horror elements in it. But remember, like a while back when I reviewed The Fifth Heart, which I found a hardback of that in like a used bookstore, and it seemed to be, because I had already read Drood at that point, and I was kind of like, and it sounded like it was along the same lines, because it was Henry James, who was, you know, a real guy, obviously, working, teaming up with Sherlock Holmes, like to solve a mystery. And I didn't love that one as much. I think it was because maybe it was more based around Sherlock Holmes lore, and it was more based around a mystery, and the mystery to me wasn't all that compelling. So it didn't really have like a lot of horror elements. Whereas Drood is much more, like I said, I don't think I'd call it a horror novel outright, but it has a lot more horror elements than The Fifth Heart had. I mean, a lot more. There's a lot of like really creepy shit going on in this. Whether it's real or not, I don't want to spoil too much about it, because I think the best thing about this book is just letting yourself get entirely involved in this world and in this situation. And like I said, this is, you know, it's real characters, it's real people that actually did live, but it's sort of fictionalized to an extent. Although I will say, just from, you know, just kind of like a peremptory reading of the biographies of both the characters involved, it really does seem like Dan Simmons took great pains to get all of the biographical details of all of this stuff right. So I would say probably like 95% of the stuff that happens in this book like actually did happen like to these people, but then the rest of it is like kind of fanciful. But like I said, you don't really know if like what's entirely real and what's not. So basically, the story of this book, it's told from the point of view of Wilkie Collins, who was a very, very popular, famous novelist back in the late 19th century. I haven't read a shit ton of his stuff, but I did read The Woman in White, which was excellent, and I also read The Moonstone, which I actually really loved. He's actually, he may have come up with, in The Moonstone, he actually did kind of come up with what they think might be the first English detective novel. So he is actually, you know, quite well, you know, known in that regard. But he's primarily known, I think, at least nowadays, as being a collaborator, a frequent collaborator and friend of Charles Dickens, who obviously is way, way more famous than Wilkie Collins, which I said it's kind of a shame because honestly, I haven't read all of Dickens' stuff, but obviously I've read A Christmas Carol, I read Great Expectations, I read Tale of Two Cities, I read like a bunch of stuff of his. And I have to say that out of all the stuff I've read of both Dickens and Wilkie Collins, I'm gonna say I like Wilkie Collins' stuff a little bit better. I do kind of feel like Dickens had a tendency to sort of like, I don't know, there's just something about his stuff that never really like grabbed me. Whereas Wilkie Collins, he wrote more of like sensationalistic, maybe not by today's standards, obviously, but he wrote kind of more horror mystery type stuff. And I don't know, that just like appealed to me more. Like I said, I think The Moonstone is a great fucking book, like a detective book. And it's the first one, like I said, in English language. And so would they kind of use, so this book kind of uses that to sort of explore, because it's all from Wilkie Collins' point of view. And the conceit of this is that he's writing this massive memoir about Charles Dickens and about Drood and about all these other things that happened, like the last 5 years of Charles Dickens's life. And he's writing that like on his deathbed, essentially, or like, he's dying because he's in ill health. So he's been working on it for a few years, and he's made a stipulation in his will that this memoir is not to be published until, like, I think he says, like 125 years after he's dead. He's actually addressing us, the reader of the future. And he's like, I want to set the record straight about all this stuff that happened, like the last 5 years of Charles Dickinson's life and all this, like, weird shit about Drood. Now, one thing, and like I said, I don't think this is a spoiler alert, but I will say that Wilkie Collins is kind of like, this is kind of like, Amadeus, the movie, which was based on the play, where it kind of like posits that Mozart and Salieri, who were kind of friends and collaborators in real life, but they sort of like dramatize it. So it's like Salieri like hated Mozart's guts because he was way better. He was a way better composer than him, and he was always like jealous and overshadowed, and almost that he like caused his death or sort of like murdered him. This is kind of along the same lines. From what I can tell from real life, I don't know, like I said, I'm not really, really familiar with their biographies, kind of surface level stuff. But they were friends for a very long time. They collaborated on not only on lots of plays and things like that, but they also collaborated on lots of like Christmas stories. They had a magazine like All the Year Round. I think they had actually more than one. I think they had one called Household Words. But they edited each other's work and things of that nature. And they were also like acted in some of their own plays and all that other kind of stuff. And were just constantly like reading stuff back and forth to each other, like staying, Wilkie Collins stayed at his house all the time and stuff like that. Now, there are some whiffs, I think, that they actually like kind of bitchily criticized each other's shit, because I think there were some things with Wilkie Collins, like in some of his letters, like kind of denigrating like some of Charles Dickens stuff, and then like Charles Dickens maybe denigrating The Moonstone, like when that came out, like the Wilkie Collins novel. So there is some kind of like hint that there maybe was some rivalry. I don't know if it's as pronounced as it is in the book, but like I said, this is like a Mozart Salieri situation where we're maybe taking something of like some little germ of Wilkie Collins being a little resentful that Charles Dickens was so much more famous than him, even though he was actually quite popular at the time, but like he lived long enough after Charles Dickens died, like to see his novels kind of like falling out of favor and Charles Dickens' fame just growing and growing. So you could say, you could just take that little germ of resentment and you could like, make this big story out of it. So what we have, and like I said, Wilkie Collins in this is all from his point of view and his memoir, and he is not only an unreliable narrator, which will be clear when you read this. Like I said, I don't think that's really a spoiler alert. He's also very, very unlikable, and it's like everything that he talks about in this. I mean, he's just like a shit person. It's just, you know what I mean? He's just like a garbage fire of a person, but he's still like he still want to like read the shit from his point of view because it's just like a fascinating story. But he's just like such a bitch. He is just like always denigrating like Charles Dickens's stuff like in this really like throwing shade sort of way. And it's like, you know, and my copy and my like book blah 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 like sold so many more copies than Charles's. So he's always kind of like blowing up his own ego. At the expense of, even though they're like nice to each other's faces. So it's like, so it's almost kind of like this constant bitch fest, but he's unlikable, but it's like really entertaining, like in an entertaining kind of way. He's also really unlikable in the sense that one, he's constantly like complaining how much pain he's in. He had gout, even though some have speculated that maybe it was syphilis and that he just said it was gout because it wasn't like polite to say that he had like an STD, but I don't really know. But he just keeps saying it's gout. So as the book goes on, he becomes more and more addicted to laudanum, opium, morphine, which actually did happen in real life. You know, so that's pretty historically accurate. And he was just at one point, and I think I mentioned this on one of our shows, but you know, when they used to do laudanum, it was kind of like you put like a few drops of opium into like red wine or something, and it's like that you'd put like two or three drops in there. Whereas in this book, I'm not sure about real life, but Wilkie Collins was straight up chugging like two or three glasses of the shit a day, just because he was saying he was in so much pain all the time. And then as he got older, the more pain and the more, you know, laudanum, the more opium he had to take. And then his doctor started prescribing morphine because he couldn't really work anymore. And then his vision started to go, which factors into this story as well. So, and like I said, he's also, and this is also historically accurate, he's also really, really anti-marriage. He doesn't really like, he likes to have sex with women, but he thinks that marrying them is like a trap and that women are all trying to like entrap dudes and like get all their money and then just like bitch at them forever and nag at them forever. So he's that kind of dude. And so what he did throughout his life was that he had a couple of mistresses, one of whom was named Caroline, and she, her and her daughter, you know, by another marriage or whatever, because she was a widow, I think. But she lived in his house, and he said on his taxes that that was his housekeeper, even though they were clearly fucking. And he also had another mistress named Martha, and he had like two or three kids with her, I think, but he would never marry them. So, like I said, so don't go into this like thinking you're gonna like this dude because he's a horrible, horrible person. But in that way, but he's still like a really entertaining narrator. And like I said, as the book goes on, and he starts talking about, you know, his opium addiction and stuff, because he's like he's really into the opium. He's basically like, well, I need it because I'm in constant pain all the time and I just have to like chug more and more. And I think it's this amazing medicine. So you're not real sure. I mean, even pretty early on in the story, you're pretty sure that this opium is addling his brain somewhat because he says like very matter-of-factly, and I don't even think this is that far into the book, that there is a woman with green skin and like fangs, and she lives in his house, like in his servant staircase, and he's the only one that can see her. So he seems to know. Oh, and he also has, there's this other apparition that he calls the other Wilkie, and it's essentially like his doppelganger. So he's clearly not super in his right mind, you know what I'm saying? Like even like from the jump. So basically what happens at the beginning of the book is that Charles Dickens, who also has a mistress. Yeah, Charles Dickens had a wife named, what was her name? Catherine. And I think they had like 10 kids or some shit like that. And he got sick of her, so he just like chucked her out. And then he started boffing this actress named Ellen Ternan, I think is her name. But he didn't want anybody to know about it. So he had like Ellen Ternan and her mom are like, he has them set up, you know, in this cottage somewhere that he's rented under an assumed name. So they were all like doing that kind of like shady shit. So he's on this train with his mistress and his mistress's mom one day. And I think in what is really a real historical thing that happened, the train derails on its way to Staplehurst. And basically, most of the first class carriage, he was in one of the first class carriages, like with his mistress and the mom, but they were the only ones in there. All of the first class carriages, but that one went off like a trellis and like fell into like this big ravine and pretty much fucked everybody up. It like killed a bunch of people. Charles Dickens, I think their, I don't know how accurate this is to like the actual incident, but their car was like kind of hanging off the edge, but it didn't fall, and they were essentially unhurt. Although Charles Dickens really had a problem like with anxiety, like being on trains pretty much from then on out, which, like I said, not surprising. So this happens, as I said, he's unhurt, and he gets out of the car, out of the train car, and he goes down to the bottom of the ravine, and he's trying to help like the other people that were hurt in the train accident. Now, while he's doing this, he notices this really, really weird dude. Like, this guy is like super, super pale, and he's kind of almost bald, and he's wearing this really like out of style, like an opera cape and a weird like out of style top hat, and he's really, really he doesn't have a nose, kind of like his nose looks like a skeleton nose, almost like someone cut his nose off. He doesn't have any eyelids, and he has these like really sharp little teeth, like he's filed his teeth down to points. And this guy, like, he sees him like kind of gliding around among the bodies and stuff, and then the guy comes up to him and he knows who he is, and he has this really creepy like hiss voice and everything. And then Charles Dickens like sees the guy like going over to people that are hurt in the accident, and then when he goes over there to check on the people, he sees that they're dead. So it's almost, so he gets the impression, he tells Wilkie Collins later, that he's like, it's almost like he was like sucking out their souls, or he was helping them to die, like he was the Grim Reaper or something like that. And he was just this really, really creepy looking guy. And so he's telling all this to his friend Wilkie Collins. He's like, you know, I had this amazing thing happen, like at, you know, after this horrible train accident, and I saw this really crazy dude, and I can't stop thinking about him. So Wilkie Collins at first is just kind of like, okay, it's like he's not really super buying it. But then Charles Dickens, like I said, or at least he says to Wilkie Collins, he's like, I'm really, like, I'm obsessed with this dude. I gotta find out what the fuck he was up to. I just can't stop thinking about it. So he basically enlists Wilkie to go down to this, what they end up like later on in the book, like calling it Undertown. Essentially, what this is almost kind of like an underground city, like underneath London. Now, I know that there really is shit like that because, you know, there's sewers and catacombs and stuff like that. But what this book posits is that Drood, this creepy dude that Dickens saw at the train wreck, is lives in this kind of underground slump, like it's an underground city essentially, and it's all the people, you know, is, and obviously this is the Victorian era, so the London of the time, you know, had some really horrible, horrible poverty and horrible slums and everything like that. So this is positing that even people that were too poor for that had to go underground and like live in the sewers essentially. And there's like hints that there's maybe cannibals and all this other stuff going on down there. And Dickens is like fascinated with it. So he takes Wilkie Collins one night. The two of them, they go, he hires this this kind of like big burly like detective dude to kind of go down there for protection, and they're gonna go into this kind of underground world like looking for Drood. I forgot to mention too that in real life, Charles Dickens's final unfinished novel, they actually, back in the day, back in the Victorian era, they actually used to serialize a lot of novels. So like the magazine would come out and it would have like one installment, and then there'd be like, you know, 6 or 12 or whatever, and then like later on they would have it bound as a book, and you know, and what have you. So Charles Dickens had worked on this mystery called The Mystery of Edwin Drood, and it was never finished. I believe only 6 installments of it were published, and then he died. And so people have tried. So it's kind of like, I think that was kind of where the jumping off place for this novel was that no one really knows what the solution of the mystery was, because Charles Dickens, one, didn't finish the book, and also didn't leave any notes as to how the book was going to finish. And it's thought there actually were, like, later, like after he died, there were some writers that tried to solve it, like from the clues that had been there, and like tried to write their own endings of it. And one of these, it is suspected, was actually written by Wilkie Collins and Charles, and one of Charles Dickens's sons, but they're not really sure. Wilkie Collins said that no, it wasn't him, but that was kind of like the speculation at the time. But yeah, so they're kind of, so he's kind of like using as a jumping off place for this novel the fact that Charles Dickens didn't finish this novel and nobody knew the solution of the mystery. Now, as the story goes on, it kind of like goes, like I said, it's set over a 5-year period. So it's almost kind of like it gets to a point where every year on the anniversary of the train wreck, Dickens seems to like disappear for a little while, almost like he's going underground and like meeting with Drood. Because there's also this whole thing where Charles Dickens is actually an expert at mesmerism, or, you know, it's kind of like hypnotism, but you can like get people to do shit for you. And what Wilkie thinks is going on is that Charles Dickens is going down into Undertown, like down into the sewers, into these crypts and everything like that, and he's like learning better mesmerism techniques from Drood, because later Charles Dickens comes up and tells him that Drood, like he kind of tells him Drood's life story, like he's like half Egyptian and he's really into mesmerism, and he has this whole cult of people that he almost kind of like can control through, you know, mind control, mesmerism. Also, it's implied that he might not be alive, at least in the way that we understand it, because it seems like the reason that he doesn't have a nose and eyelids and stuff like that is that when he first got to England, he was attacked by a bunch of thugs and they cut off his eyelids and stuff like that. And they thought he was dead, but then he ended up living, or he resurrected himself, like using his mesmerism powers. So there's this whole implication that this Drood person is actually not entirely like a real, it's not a person in the sense, like I said, he's not like a vampire or anything like that, but he's almost like a resurrected dude. Like he resurrected himself through kind of like ancient Egyptian magic. So there's a lot of like Egyptian kind of things, which kind of reminded me of young Sherlock Holmes a little bit, you know, with the whole like underground Egyptian cult. So as it goes on, like Wilkie and Charles Dickens's relationship over this 5-year period begins to sort of sour, like, at times, because Wilkie, he's kind of becoming obsessed with Drood as well. Like, at first, he didn't really believe that Charles Dickens had seen this guy, but as time goes on, other people get involved. Like, there's also another detective who's basically convinced, and he says to Wilkie, he's like, look, you really need to spy on Charles Dickens for me. I think he's in danger because he's going and meeting with Drood, we think, because we're having him followed. And Drood is really dangerous because he lives in this underground city and he has like hundreds and thousands of followers that he basically mind controls into doing whatever he wants. And he has probably been responsible for at least like 300 something murders around London. So as other people kind of become involved in this, Wilkie becomes convinced that Drood is actually a real person, is actually a real danger. So he's kind of like trying to sort of investigate what the hell Charles Dickens wants with Drood. And then he kind of starts to get haunted by him as well. Like he starts having, you know, visions of him and various things. So, and like I said, and his drug addiction is getting worse as well. And it starts to go to a point where he's gotten to such a point where he's so paranoid that he thinks that he might have to actually kill Charles Dickens, and he sort of like makes the plan to do it. So like I said, very much like a Mozart Salieri type of situation, but with way, way, way more opium and like mesmerism and like weird Egyptian shit. There's also one point too where Wilkie becomes convinced that Drood has put a magical scarab or something like that, like into his brain, which is like controlling his thoughts. So there's that whole situation too. But yeah, so like I said, I hesitate to just recommend this across the board, because this is very much, I mean, whether you like this book or not is very much gonna depend upon, I mean, I don't think that you don't need to have read any of Charles Dickinson's stuff or any of Wilkie Collins's stuff, but it would help. And like, if you're real into that, like Victorian era literature, if you're into that time period, then it really does lend a richness to the story. Because like I said, there's so much biographical detail in here. There's so much stuff about Charles Dickens's work and Wilkie Collins's work. Because at some points, like during this 5-year period, Charles Dickens is doing like reading tours of like the England and like the United States, and there's a lot of that in there. Wilkie Collins is working on the Moonstone, you know, the novel, and so there's a lot of that stuff in there. But over and like I said, there's a lot of stuff too about the sort of rivalry between the two of them, the friendship between the two of them, which starts to fracture. Wilkie's possibly slipping sanity and his ever increasing drug use. And you're not really sure entirely like who's telling the truth about this Drood character, where he actually lives, where he comes from. You know, is he really this criminal mastermind, or is he just misunderstood? You know, so it kind of goes back and forth with some of the characters being like, oh, he's not real, or he's just like an urban legend essentially, or he is really real and he's really dangerous. And so there's all this kind of like everybody's like spying on each other and like all this kind of stuff. So it's just, and like I said, because of Wilkie Collins in particular, because this is from his point of view, and because he's an opium addict, there's a lot of horror elements in the sense that not only the stuff about Drood, which is creepy, and all the stuff about kind of like the underground city and like these crazy like Egyptian temples like that are underneath the ground. So there's all that kind of stuff, but there's also like the crazy shit that he sees that he pretty much knows. It doesn't seem clear from how he talks that he seems to know that they're hallucinations to a degree, like the green-skinned woman and the other Wilkie. He seems to know that they're hallucinations because he does seem to say in the text that nobody sees them but him. But on the other hand, he talks about them as though they're real. And then there's also a couple of points in the novel where it seems like somebody else sees them. So but like I said, as it goes on, because of his addiction and because of his of something that happens later that I'm not going to spoil, you're not entirely sure how reliable he is as a narrator. Like he could just be like the stuff that he's saying could be not exactly what's happening, and it's just and everything is sort of filtered through his perception. So you're not entirely sure how much of the shit that happened like happened the way that he described it happening. So there's that too. So, like I said, I d loved this book, and I was like so excited to like reread it again because I think I read it. Yeah, I got out of the library like back in 2009. It came out very early in 2009, like in February, and I think I got it when my library got it a couple months later, and I read it after that, and I just like couldn't put it down. I was just like I was totally immersed in this world. I mean, it's just so vividly drawn, and I think one of the things that I didn't like about The Fifth Heart was, and I think I mentioned this in my review of it, was that I thought it went on like for pages and pages too long of like describing, you know, what the World's Fair looked like and all this other kind of stuff, where I thought that that wasn't really necessary. This one has a lot of extraneous detail too, but I feel like it's more, it's paced better, it's spaced out better, and it really does, it really is in the service of like immersing you in this Victorian era. And this just creepy, like these creepy, like shit smeared streets and fog and rain and these underground crypts and there's all that kind of stuff. So I guess because it had more of a horror element to it, whereas The Fifth Heart was just kind of more like a pretty standard mystery. So I think this one is a lot more, just had a lot more visceral impact for me just because it had all of that great, like creepy, very gothic Victorian imagery. Like, you know, everything was churchyards and just creepy old crumbling crypts and, you know, underground, you know, going through the sewers in a boat and like, you know, cannibal kids and shit like that. You know, and like I said, in this really, really creepy, figure of Drood, who you're not entirely sure like what this guy is or what he's capable of because he just keeps to turning up like at all these places, and just the description of him like sounds so unsettling, and his presence just kind of like looms over the whole thing. So I think that's like really, really well done. But as I said, even though this is more, it's not a straight up horror novel, I would call it historical fiction with horror elements, but I would really, really recommend it if you, I mean, if you liked The Terror, because that was kind of a similar thing where it was historical fiction, but then it also had like a horror supernatural element. This is kind of like along those same lines. I think that I like this one better than The Terror. I guess because I'm more of a literary person, like, and I had actually read some of Wilkie Collins's stuff, and I actually had read some of Charles Dickinson's stuff. So I think that appealed to me more. because I knew a lot more about that world and what was in Victorian era fiction and stuff. If you're not into that kind of stuff, then you might just think this is like boring as shit. Which, you know, I get that. That's a legitimate complaint. So I'm not gonna say go into this like thinking it's gonna be like wham, you know, wham bang, this big like horror whatever. It's more like a creepy, unsettling mystery that goes off in all these kind of vast tendrils. But like I said, this one, as opposed to the Fifth Heart, maybe this is just my perception of it, but the Fifth Heart seemed to go off on a lot of tangents that didn't really seem to serve the central narrative. Whereas this one seems a lot more focused in that, yes, while it goes off on different things and they talk about, you know, stuff that was in real life going on at that time, like I said, like Charles Dickens's you know, tour, like his reading tour of the United States, and it kind of talks about that. Talks about Wilkie Collins and talks about him working on the Moonstone and how they got ideas and, you know, reading to each other. But it always comes back to the central Drood mystery. You know, who that guy is, where is Charles Dickens going? Like, is he really like in service to this guy now? Is this guy like mesmerize him and like taking him over and like making him do his bidding? And like Wilkie Collins even thinks for a time that maybe Charles Dickens killed somebody, you know, and like covered it up for whatever reason. So there's all this kind of, so there's the mystery in this is like way more potent, I think, than the one that was in Fifth Hearts, which I think which is why I liked this one so much more. Just the atmosphere of this one is just fantastic, and I'm really, really glad that I reread it the second time. But yeah, if that sounds like something you would like I said, it's a commitment. It's very, very, very long. I'm recording this review like literally like an hour or two before I have to like put it up because I was just like I spent like all of day reading because it I don't think it took me that long to read the first time, but I was just kind of like, I guess because I was busy and I just kept, you know, having to come back to it, and so it took me like way longer than it normally would like to read it. But yeah, it's super long. But if that sounds like something you would like, and if you like Dan Simmons' other stuff, particularly his historical fiction, I think this is like my favorite historical fiction of his that I read. I can't remember. I've read like a bunch of his other ones that I think were really good too. Like Carry and Comfort is really good and all those other kind of stuff too. But yeah, definitely check out Drood. Like I said, hopefully one day, Guillermo del Toro, blah, 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 Guillermo del Toro, if I could say his fucking name, will get to make the movie out of it, because I just think that would be fantastic. But it seems like such a long time that I feel like it's probably not going to happen now, but I'm still kind of hoping maybe someday. But yeah, so definitely check out Drood if it sounds like it's your cup of tea or your glass of opium, as the case may be. And I will see you guys on the next Tomes of Terror. Bye.